biggest difference between like incredibly great marketplaces and good marketplaces or okay marketplaces is if you're actually creating an entirely new experience that couldn't have existed before. Either you're unlocking new supply that never could have existed before that marketplace, or you're somehow like enabling a connection that never could have happened on the demand side.
Welcome to Two-Sided, the Marketplace Podcast, brought to you by ShareTribe.
Hello and welcome. I am Sjoerd, CMO at ShareTribe, and I am your host. Welcome to episode number 3 of season 3 of Two-Sided. Again, as a reminder, so as opposed to previous seasons, this season we're talking to investors, not founders. However, like many VCs, my guest in this episode has been a founder and marketplace operator for many, many years himself as well. I'm talking today to Andrew Blackman, co-founder of Marketplace Capital. Andrew has a wealth of experience in building and operating marketplaces, and since a short while has also been investing in online marketplaces. I feel that throughout the conversation, there are some really, really valuable insights for aspiring marketplace founders, such as, for example, the importance of creating new market opportunities. So Andrew explains how really, truly successful marketplaces, they unlock completely new supply or demand that did not exist before, the way Airbnb did this for short-term rentals, for example. Another thing we touch on is why building traction before raising capital is key. Andrew shares some advice on how to validate your marketplace idea and gain traction without relying on funding too early. And maybe finally, of course, unavoidably, at this moment in time, we talk about AI, the impact of AI on the future of marketplaces. So Andrew shares how he feels AI can enhance marketplace experiences, making connection more efficient, and just overall improving the customer satisfaction. As always, I had a great time while also learning a ton, just talking and listening to Andrew. I hope you will as well. So here is my chat with Andrew Blackman. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's really nice that you take the time to be here. I know it's early on your end, so let's get straight into it. But before we go down the marketplace rabbit hole, could you briefly tell us a little bit about yourself? What did you do before you became an investor in marketplaces?
Sure. So I've been a marketplace operator most of my career, actually. It's only very recently that I moved to the investing side in the last kind of year or two. I've always been an angel investor, but as a professional investor only in the last couple of years. But as an operator for most of my career, over 20 plus years, I built a few different marketplaces. Most notably, I built a company in the UK and Europe called Get Me In, which was, if you guys are familiar with StubHub in the US, we were an equivalent company in the UK. We built that business, two-sided marketplace, grew it, and then sold it to Ticketmaster, the biggest player in that space. And then I ended up, after that sale, running Ticketmaster's resale marketplace internationally. So that's where my first sort of big marketplace success and experience came from. And after that sale, I also saw the power of marketplaces and how great they are when they work. And so, with the proceeds from some of that sale, I started angel investing in other marketplaces. So as an angel, I invested in about 20 marketplaces over about a 10-year period. Then I moved back to the US and launched another marketplace with a couple of colleagues that I had met that had founded a business called Top Adder, which is a live auction marketplace. And we actually grew that to be pretty big. We got to over $400 million of GMV at our peak, and we were profitable and thought we had made it. But that marketplace, unfortunately, we didn't have the network effects that you like to see in marketplaces, at least not the really strong ones. And so ultimately, it became a performance marketing driven business, and we hit some headwinds. So yeah. I've experienced both sides of it, both good and bad of marketplace dynamics, and I've involved in a lot of operating roles. And a couple of years ago, I moved to spend more time on my angel portfolio. Then I became a scout at Craft Ventures, who do a bunch of marketplace investing, and decided I really enjoyed the sort of advising and investing side of things, and met my partner Mike at the same time, and we shared a similar thesis around marketplaces. and decided to launch this fund. I'm relatively new to the professional investing side and much longer on the building and operating
side. Yeah, it's fine because I was going to ask you in your introduction that I think that my experience with marketplace founders is that they never found just one marketplace. Like I've had the feeling of many people, or at least many people, once you see the marketplace model, you suddenly see it everywhere, or you see at least opportunity for it everywhere. So that's really funny because I feel that's exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a few times to get anything right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's actually because I had that written down as a question also. That's kind of an interesting story, from how Marketplace Capital came to be, I feel. Like, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So I was, as I mentioned, a scout at Craft Ventures looking at marketplace deals. I myself had, built a few marketplaces and seen the power. And if you look historically at just simple metrics like venture returns and some of the largest and most successful IPOs in history, a lot of them, a very large disproportionate number of them, are marketplaces. Uh-huh. And so we had this thesis that marketplaces, when they work, they really, really work and they create this great outcome. But they're also no doubt harder than other businesses, more traditional sort of B2B SaaS or even direct to consumer business, because you got to get both sides right at once.
Yeah, I was going to, if you don't mind, if you don't mind interrupting, but why do you think it is? I mean, I can have some theories, but what exactly makes it harder? Because I think a lot of people underestimate that part of the equation.
I mean, there's a really practical reason that they're harder, is because you have more than one customer at any given time, right? And sometimes you have two or three, and competing those interests and making everyone happy becomes not just linearly harder, but exponentially harder the more sort of players you put into the mix. That's like one sort of practical reason. But the other more sort of esoteric reason, or the reason I think about, is that when marketplaces work, they're really like catching lightning in a bottle. And you end up seeing a natural lift to the business where, more supply begets more demand, begets more supply, begets more demand. Yeah. And those are very, it's just very, very rare to have that happen in any business, just to have that natural lift.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a good marketplace. That's what turns a good marketplace into a great marketplace. Yeah. And so from a venture perspective, if you don't have that, you end up having an outcome that doesn't really always support a venture investment.
Yeah, sorry, I interrupted your story about actually how you came with Mike. So you were saying that you both saw that marketplaces create these incredible outcomes if they work. And then,
I saw that as an investor and an operator. And then we both decided independently, actually, that we wanted to raise a fund. So Mike, I don't know if your listeners are familiar, but Mike, my partner, Mike, created a community called everythingmarketplaces.com. So he's a community builder at heart. He was also an operator before that, but he created this community. Now it has a couple thousand active members that are all marketplace founders of various stages, from just getting started or have an idea to large and thriving marketplaces. And so within this community, he always thought about adding a fund or an investment vehicle to it. I had been inside Craft and on my own thinking about how should I raise a fund to pursue this strategy. We looked around and there are a few different funds that kind of focus on marketplaces, that like marketplaces, but there was no fund that was dedicated to marketplaces. And so we thought there was a big opening in the market, and we thought that the combination of that focus and the community support could make us really outperform. So the community can help us spot breakout marketplaces early and can also help us support the companies that we invest in. And so he and I decided to team up and launch this. And we launched it last year, the beginning of last year, with our first fund.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it came to be.
Yeah, I know Mike, of course, because the company that sort of provides this podcast, ShareTribe, he built his first marketplace, or I don't know if it was his first, but I think he built his most successful marketplace on ShareTribe, Studio Time. So I know him well. And of course, I'm also a member of the Everything Marketplace community. So you mentioned earlier that you share a little bit of a similar thesis, or you've sort of developed a thesis. Like, could you maybe explain a little bit more about that? Sort of maybe by the hand of what are you looking for in a marketplace, or what are the type of marketplaces that usually draw your attention or your checkbook?
Yeah, it's actually super interesting. We've looked at our portfolio recently. So just to give you some perspective on what we do, we invest relatively small amounts in a lot of businesses. Mm-hmm. So some venture funds are very concentrated. We are not concentrated. We've made 21 investments so far in the first kind of year and a half. Yeah. We expect to make about 40 investments out of this fund.
Okay.
And so we have a lot of data to look at, and we see thousands of companies, as you can imagine. So we do have a very high bar, but we also have a lot of data in terms of the kind of marketplaces that we ended up liking and backing. And it's pretty interesting in that it's not focused on any one sector or even business model. You know, we've got business to business marketplaces, we've got business to consumer marketplaces, mm-hmm. we've got some companies that are sort of in the marketplace stack, we like to call it, so they sell to other marketplaces.
Yeah.
And so it's been pretty varied. So our thesis is actually much, much simpler, which is that just what I said earlier, that marketplaces, we think, create the winning business model in almost every sector. I mean, it's the kind of the original promise of the internet. You're going to connect people that couldn't have otherwise connected before we brought the world online. And so that's what marketplaces are. You're going to connect more than one side in a transaction or some kind of activity. And that exists in business to business, that exists in business to consumer, that exists in healthcare, that exists in labor, that exists in pretty much every sector. And so that's kind of how our investments have unfolded, actually. We just believe the model is the one that is right. And, you know, not obviously not everyone is going to win, mm-hmm. but we think the model is the one that's going to right. So that's, we look at for that model in different businesses. And we've backed at this point, three different healthcare related businesses, okay. a couple of different like labor marketplaces, you know, five or six that are direct to consumer, or not direct to consumer, but business to consumer kind of related. Uh-huh. We've done a couple in childcare and sort of education.
Okay.
We've done a couple of business to business, like pretty much all across
yeah,
the board.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been pretty interesting. And part of our thesis too, because one of the things that we wanted to do is not just, you know, focus on one thing, because you never know as an investor what's going to come across your desk. So even just the marketplace focus was enough of a filter.
Yeah.
Inside that focus, we invest in everything. And in fact, even geographically, we just made our first investment in Europe this month.
Okay.
And so
can you share?
We expect to do more globally. Actually, that company is more in the marketplace stack,
okay.
I would
okay.
say.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've done two companies that are in the marketplace stack, meaning that their customers and partners are all marketplaces. And we have an obvious kind of vantage point on that. And we talk to a lot of marketplaces, so we can vet that, but also that's a scenario where we can help those companies more than anything.
Yeah,
and that's
true.
A company based in France. They're called Raleigh, and they're basically an alternative data source for credit and other information. So, for example, they work with gig marketplaces like Uber and DoorDash and others, and they have more data about those Uber drivers than anyone else. And then that they can also leverage data from other alternative sources like government portals and other pieces to help underwrite financial products for those customers. So
that's a really interesting model. Yeah.
And they're growing really quickly, and we've known them for a bit, and it was a super exciting investment for us. That one was just closed.
So yeah, congratulations.
Our first non-US deal, but we expect to do more.
Yeah, our company is Europe folk. Well, not actually the majority of shared customers. The vast majority is US, but there's, I can see, for example, the Marketplace conference where we met also. I think there's lots of interesting opportunities in Europe as well. So really nice to hear. So basically you said, just to recap, like you just sort of believe in the model, and then it can be applied to any industry or particular field. Yeah.
We do have like various patterns and things that we've seen. So we do.
Yeah, that was going to be my question.
We have different theses, but they're different in different sectors. So for example, one pattern that we've seen, and it probably doesn't come as a surprise to a lot of folks, but there's just been a big change in the way people work over the last, 5 years since the pandemic, but even before that, there's been this big change in the way people work, more people working independently and wanting sort of control of their own lifestyles and who they work for. They don't want to work for, one company or even, a couple companies. They want total flexibility. So that's given rise to a bunch of different marketplaces that we've seen and invested in. We are an investor in a company called Berry Street that's a marketplace for dietitians, and they're growing incredibly quickly, and because they're creating this ability for dietitians to launch a business and actually run their own business on the platform. We're an investor in a company called Teach Me, which is a marketplace for sort of amateur lessons in various categories of sports, pickleball and golf and tennis. And so they're creating a new sort of revenue stream for these coaches, or I guess you call them instructors, but they weren't previously instructors. They're basically creating this new supply, and we're seeing that in a bunch of different sectors. So that general concept of like labor changing has been a big theme that we've seen kind of repeatedly.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I think indeed, like this whole change of labor and people no longer following like a linear career and like that creates massive opportunities. So I can totally see that. When you say like, of course, like you look to healthcare and things you mentioned now, like, is there still some sort of like, let's call them like green lights that you look for in a marketplace that like, oh, this is like, for example, I really like that you said about the instructor marketplace, that basically that is, you know, it's kind of like a market creator kind of thing, right? Like that market doesn't really exist. Is that, for example, one that you're like, oh, that is, you know, like the most famous example is like Airbnb, where basically, you know, like the supply side didn't exist before, like people didn't rent out their room or something. Yeah. So is that one?
Exactly right. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that one, because that is probably like the most important that I look for personally. We have sort of like a, you know, a checklist. Like there's I wouldn't say we go through the checklist with each investment, but there are checklists out there. And for those of you listening, you know, to the podcast, you can see some of the content that's been put together there around, you want to see, you know, fragmentation on both sides of the marketplace. Yeah. You want to see liquidity. There's all these things you want to see. But for us, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like the biggest difference between like incredibly great marketplaces and good marketplaces or okay marketplaces is if you're actually creating an entirely new experience that couldn't have existed before. Either you're unlocking new supply that never could have existed before that marketplace, or you're somehow like enabling a connection that never could have happened on the demand side. So, you know, one example, you mentioned Airbnb. I'm actually working with and advising a company. This is actually not in our portfolio because they're a little bit ahead.
Yeah.
They're further along than our portfolio. Yeah. They're a Series C sort of stage company. But I'm working with a company that I'm incredibly excited about called PadSplit. And they're a marketplace where they do exactly kind of what the name says, PadSplit. You can imagine what they do. They're basically a co-living marketplace. Yeah. So they take single family homes and they allow that owner of that single family home to rent out that home by their room instead of the home at once. And so they have a whole platform where they help that owner, you know, reconfigure their house to be, you know, suitable for PadSplit. And they have, you know, shared kitchens and bathrooms, and some of them are private. They have the whole thing set up so that they can turn a single family home into 6 or 7 or 8 units. So before they existed, that inventory wasn't there. It was only single family home where you could get together with people that you didn't really know and pool in and find a way to access it. But because they've unlocked it, they've become the cheapest and most affordable housing option in every market that they're in. And so, you know, they're still relatively early, but they already have, you know, over 10,000 units that are live in the US. And to me, I'm excited about it too, because it has the potential to, it's not the silver bullet solution, but it's part of the solution to a lot of the housing affordability problems we have. And, you know, it's a very interesting marketplace that, if it works and it's starting to work, has that elements of a flywheel where, because they'll, as they get more supply in a given market, it's a better proposition for that potential renter because they can actually move from house to house if they need to, and they have more selection. And then as it's more selection, more investors want to come in and actually invest in and build these units out. And so it's super interesting. But it's, again, it's not in our portfolio.
No.
It's just one that I happen to have met and I'm working with.
No, this is a really interesting one. I was actually thinking that, like, this is one of these things also that I'm sure you come across this as well, that you're like, how didn't I think of this before? Because basically what you're describing, like, I'm from Amsterdam originally, and that is how most people get their first, like, because in Amsterdam, the housing problem has been alarming and permanent somehow. And that is how people get their first, you know, student room out of the house. It's always some sort of, or not always, but it's often like some split, like some person who owns a house and then splits it up. But it's never been possible to, I know there have been early marketplace models around it, but it's never really, took off as far as I remember. Oh, that's really cool. That's really cool. You mentioned earlier, like, looking for the difference between like a good and a great marketplace. Like, how do you, and actually maybe good to mention that you, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, but your marketplace capital is really about early stage marketplaces, right? Like seed.
Yeah, we invest at the seed, sometimes the pre-seed stage. But the thing that's nice about investing today versus like investing, you know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, is even at the seed stage, expectations are a lot higher. So even the seed stage companies that we look at typically have real GMV, real revenue, real customers, even cohorts that you can look at and understand their behavior, just because of tools like things like you've built to make it easier than ever to launch and to get traction without a lot of capital. And so even at the stage that we invest in, we tend to see signals that something is going to be, something is working. We've done a couple of investments purely like we love the idea, we love the founder, and we think there's a chance here, but it's not even live yet, or there's something like, it's just super early.
Yeah.
We've done that a couple of times, but we try not to, because it's just so hard to predict.
Yeah, because exactly.
So
because
we prefer to see some real traction.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was going to be my question, indeed. Like, how do you see that this flywheel is taking off if it's so early in the journey? But of course, like you said, like, there's...
When we have a larger fund and a larger, you know, pool of capital, we probably will go later stage as well, because I think that this stuff does play out over time.
Yeah.
And it is sometimes hard to see early on. And again, we believe that the winners in marketplace, the other reason why marketplaces create these enormous outcomes is because the winners tend to take most.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that there's one winner in a marketplace. We don't believe that you can't be like the number two or number three, but it's way better to be the number one. And we've seen that over and over again. Sometimes even at the seed or series, it's just hard to predict who's going to win. And we have a bit of an advantage with the community, so we can spot things. I think ultimately we expect to go later as well.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. You mentioned you were thinking about going, jumping into later stage. I assume that's not going to happen with the same fund.
That's right. This first fund we've been public about this. And actually, if you go to our website, obsessedwithmarketplaces.com, which is, I love that.
Same.
That's our website URL. It's also marketplace.capital. You also will find the same site, but we have a founder's manual that sort of describes what we do and how we do it. But we invest exclusively in sort of early stage marketplaces today because it's a $10 million fund.
Yeah.
We write checks average between $100,000 and $250,000. So relatively small checks. We don't lead rounds. We invest alongside other institutional leads. Mm-hmm. But we're about halfway through this fund and we're planning sometime in 2025 to start fundraising for Fund 2, which would be sometime in 2026. Mm. And for us, Fund 2 is just based on the success that we're seeing with Fund 1 and the ability to do this at a little bit of a bigger scale.
Yeah.
We still think that we want to not be a lead investor typically because, again, we're spread pretty thin across our portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So we will continue to do seed and pre-seed, but we might also do, you know, A's and B's with that fund since we'll have more capital, more firepower at our disposal. And so the first fund is looking really good. I mean, it's early. These funds are 10-year funds. And so we're in year two. We've had, you know, four or five of our portfolio marked up in really great rounds. And so we're excited about that, but it's very, very early to see.
But anyway, that's a better way to get into the next fundraising with a couple marked up at least. Yeah. Oh, congratulations. When you think about like the market and like, or when you think about like marketplaces that are sort of innovative, do you see any sort of interesting monetization models, or do you see like still sort of commission takes most, or like most still work on commission, or do you see, because you mentioned earlier, I forgot the name of the company you invested in, but it has this, Raleigh, which is like, I've seen a lot recently also like with different financing players coming in and like making new. So what is your view on that?
We've seen a lot of different monetization models and they can really run the gamut. I mean, we do like to, if it's a pure marketplace, we like to invest. I mean, this is probably the clearest thing. We want to make sure that marketplace is involved in the flow of funds and they're not just like a lead generation type business, just because it's much harder to build lasting value in the lead generation businesses.
Yeah.
So we do want to see that you're in that flow of funds and the customers interacting directly with you and you're paying out, you know, suppliers. We think that makes, you know, a ton of sense. But we've also seen a lot of these marketplaces that have been able to sell a product that's really valuable on one side of the marketplaces as a, you know, sort of a wedge or a stickiness or a way to build out supply, for example. So those are like what we'd call sort of SaaS enabled marketplaces where they have some sort of software product that one side of the marketplace is paying them for. Sometimes they're giving it away for free as a way to, you know, enable transactions, but typically, you know, one side is paying for it. We've seen that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And we have seen, you know, you mentioned financial products or other services that are layered on top of the marketplace. I think that also makes sense, but tends to be most effective when you're at sort of scale and you have, you know, an audience that it's meaningful for, because those things rely on usually like you're in a better position to have data and you can support it. But this idea of like SaaS enabled marketplace is one that we really do believe makes a lot of sense. And we have invested a few times in that, where basically the SaaS was like what the business started as, but because they have this great compelling SaaS product, there's an opportunity to launch a marketplace on top of it. It's not always like fully thought through that we're going to be a marketplace, but sometimes it's, well, we have this side. How do we like, what's the next step to make ourselves, you know, really indispensable? And if you build a marketplace on top of that, then it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was going to say like classic, like comfort of tools, David and network type of approach, but indeed, like surprisingly often an afterthought. When you imagine, for example, maybe in the light of the pitch for the next fund, like what do you see, what gets you excited, like in the marketplace area still?
I guess there's two main things that get me excited. One is, and this is sort of a reaction to some of the feedback we get, which is like, oh, aren't all the good marketplace ideas taken?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like isn't it too late to invest in the marketplace? We hear that all the time. And I think it's kind of funny because all you have to do is just like think about your own personal life every day, but also the businesses that you're involved in every day and how much inefficiency there is in the world of commerce and just finding the right partner or customer or supplier or whatever it might be. And so we just think it's still early days in terms of taking that inefficiency out, creating marketplaces that actually help you find that unique person on this planet of 8 billion people that can solve your problem. Yeah. And the internet promises that. And so we basically, like, that's the biggest reason we're excited is we think it's still very, very early days in marketplaces. Yeah. And we think they will take over every single industry and category at some point. So that's like the very broad, pie in the sky thing. But I think in terms of like actual practical things, a lot of people point to AI and the impact of artificial intelligence on all of these different, you know, use cases and business models. For us, I think it's going to be a phenomenal thing for marketplaces because AI can transform the experience on marketplaces and can make things possible that never could have been possible before, whether it's, you know, digesting a bunch of information, enabling lots of communication back and forth, but sort of all these like labor intensive processes that you couldn't have imagined before. But AI cannot replace, importantly, AI cannot replace the customer relationships. And that's what makes a marketplace really, really powerful. And building that place for liquidity, that place that distributes to customers and distributes to suppliers, that's the real value of a marketplace, is the network. Mm-hmm. And so both from a positive and a defensible point, I'm super excited about AI because I see opportunities all the time where this marketplace that existed in, you know, 5 years ago has a really bad experience, but now today with AI can have a phenomenal experience. Yet if it works, it's not like another one can come along day two and just build a better mousetrap because it's the network that makes it valuable. So we've seen a few of those examples. I'm not sure who's going to win in some of these things. No. So it's like one of those scenarios you asked about earlier. Well, how do you know who to invest in? We don't really always know. But one area as an example of this, just to make it more concrete, is I've looked at a bunch of companies in the home services space. You know, we've had in the past 10 years, you know, explosion of marketplaces like, you know, Yelp and Thumbtack and Angie's List and Home Advisor, all these marketplaces, because home services is a huge category. Yeah. But if you look at every one of those marketplaces, and they all do a good job, you know, they connect people and they're a good marketing platform, but they all have very poor customer experiences, or you can see it in the net promoter scores. Yeah. Like, people don't like it on either side, on the supply side and on the demand side, because it's such a hard problem to solve. But if you think about, and we've seen this pitch, so I'm not advocating to go and build this, because we've seen this pitch a bunch of times where AI can solve a lot of this, because AI can help you diagnose. Let's just use an example of something in your house. AI can help you, you know, diagnose what the problem is, find the best potential vendor, communicate with that vendor back and forth, figure out what it's going to take to fix the problem, and then just basically provide you with a solution. Yeah. And then on the vendor side, AI can make it so that you're not dealing with like 100 different window shoppers that want to talk to you and waste your time about potential jobs, but actually just hire someone. Yeah. We've seen that pitch. It makes sense. But the problem with this business, or the hard part about this business, is going to be distribution to both sides. And so we think if someone cracks it and someone gets like a, you know, that flywheel going and wins this market, that's a potential to be an enormous marketplace.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's going to do it yet. We've seen like 5 or 6 of these pitches. I'm waiting for someone to do really well at this, and we'd love to back them when they do.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, actually, because I've just been recently thinking about this. I'm going a bit off track now, but what we've earlier said, I think I got this from Matthias Ockenfels from Speed Invest some years ago, who said like marketplaces, they bring transparency, efficiency, and trust, like to a thing. And I've been thinking about, for something, I don't remember where I got this idea, but they're all like, there are three forms of basically information asymmetry. Like one side, like there's information asymmetry between the sides of the market. And I think that is something that like AI is so well set to do, right? To take that information from both sides and somehow equalize that asymmetry, like whether that is the amount of vendors that is available or whether the price is reasonable. And on the other side, like what you also said, because that's what I don't often think about the supplies, but that like for a plumber service, provide the actual information that is needed so that when that person comes on the job, knows that that's the job they signed up for and not a totally different job. Yeah.
It happens in so many different categories where you don't even think about it today because it's just the way it is. It's just the status quo. But you spend, as a consumer, certainly as a in business as well, but as a consumer, you spend so much time and effort doing research that you don't have to do theoretically if you trusted a platform that was doing that research for you. And there are cases where you want full transparency and you want to make like decisions, you know, you want to read a ton of reviews and figure things out. But a lot of times you don't actually, you just want product that works. And so, you know, Uber is a great example. You don't really want to like choose your driver. You just want to know that the driver is great and going to show up on time and then going to take you where you need to go. And so we think that that's true in a lot of different bases as well. But even as you get to things that you want more sort of control over, more choice, and AI can do that for you. If you're like, hey, I really want to go on like the, you know, vacation. This is like the kind of stuff I'm interested in. This is my family. Like, it's hard to do that with a marketplace, but it's much easier to do that with some kind of AI agent that's actually acting on your behalf and helping you figure out and digest information that's out there so you don't, you know, have to do it all yourself.
Yeah. No.
And I've seen that happening in different sectors. I mean, it's, you know, this is all like easier said than
for
done.
For sure.
But I believe it's going to happen. I believe the marketplace winners of tomorrow are not necessarily the ones of today. A lot of it comes down to the fact that, you know, they've built their business model, how they've built it. So take the home services example. I think it's unlikely that the Yelps or Thumbtacks or Angie's List of the world are going to be like the winners in AI. I could be wrong about this. There's people that feel the opposite, that AI is going to just like force all the gains to the current winners. I actually don't agree, but we'll see. It certainly creates an opening to have a compelling product.
Yeah, I can see both ways. Like, also referring to what you said earlier, that sort of the important part is still the network. And of course, the incumbents often have the network, right? Like, they have that asset already. So I can see both ways,
That's the counter argument to what I just said.
Yeah, no, totally.
But
you have to choose, yeah.
Yeah, I've been in enough big companies. In fact, most relevantly, like, you know, at Ticketmaster, we had all the distribution for business model reasons. We couldn't compete with, you know, the likes of StubHub. Yeah. And now I'm also an investor in a company called SeatGeek.
Yeah,
and
I know SeatGeek.
We couldn't compete with those businesses, not because we didn't have the distribution scale, but because we just...
Too big.
We were beholden to our customers and to our business model. And so I think the same thing is true in a lot of other categories. And it takes, you know, a very long time to shift those behaviors, and it creates big opportunities for upstarts to come in and do
well. I believe that. Last question, speaking about the marketplace of tomorrow, what advice would you have for a new marketplace founder, you know, very early stage, pre-product, product? Like, what is the number one thing that you think, like, this is what they should be thinking about, or what they should be doing, or even should not be doing?
What I hear the most about, because I'm now an investor, I'm sitting in like the venture capitalist seat, and most people come to me trying to, you know, obviously raise capital. I would say that speaking directly to like a founder before they've raised money, trying to figure out what to do, I think like the venture capital route is absolutely not for every business. And so I would, as a founder, try to sort of preserve as much optionality as possible and try to prove out whatever marketplace value proposition you're trying to build before you go and raise money. And so that might be faking the supply side of it or doing something to validate just that there's the demand side of it without actually having to build the supply side, or vice versa, because I've seen companies that their goal is basically to raise money. And if your goal is to raise money, you might be successful. You'll raise money for something that you probably shouldn't or didn't need to raise money for. And so that's just like a very high level advice I get, not just to marketplace founders, but to any founder. In my own personal lived experience, like, my biggest success came from a company that we never raised venture money for. And I've also been in companies where we've raised, you know, not hundreds of millions, but like dozens. I guess in my last company, we raised $65 million and ultimately had no good outcome for anyone. And so I feel like that's one piece of advice. In terms of marketplace specific, I think, again, trying to boil down that problem, the one that you can accomplish without capital, is part of the exercise. So, like, how do you get the supply side without spending money? How do you focus on enough of a narrow wedge? Maybe it's like, if you're building like a local marketplace, how do you like tackle one neighborhood or one postcode or one geography? Those are, you know, some of the practical things we tell people. But generally, it's try to build a great business without capital.
That's the
ultimate success.
I think that's fantastic advice. Thanks. I think that is often overlooked. I think a lot of the startup advice that we hear is always somehow drenched in venture capital, because those are just the biggest outcomes often. But I agree that probably does not apply to most businesses, even like most marketplace businesses. Even there might be just a few. And
it's also a reality that it's been easier historically, over the period that we're in. That was a crazy period where it was easier to raise capital than it is today. So capital raising, I think, which is very good for everybody, for both investors and for the companies. It's very good that it's a much higher bar to raise capital today. It's a great thing, because again, the worst scenario is for both an investor and for an entrepreneur is to raise money for a company that doesn't need or
can't
return that capital. And so that's one piece of advice. But the funniest thing is that's the hardest advice for people to hear. And it's really strange to me because it's not self-serving at all. I, as a venture capital, I actually want people to want to raise money, but that tends to be what we say is that I don't know if you really need to raise capital for this. The flip side is that when something is working, again, as I mentioned, marketplaces, I think AI makes a lot of things cheaper and more efficient, and there's been a bunch of advances that make it easier to build. Distribution is still the hardest part of any business. So if you can raise capital to pour fuel on a fire that's already starting to burn, that's fantastic, and that's where we want to spend our time.
And then they should go to obsessedwithmarketplaces.com.
Yeah, and the other beauty of our fund and business is that, you know, we support companies even if we don't invest. And that's every fund might say that. But for us, it's actually true because of the community.
Yeah.
So you're in the community. We encourage everyone to join the community.
Yeah.
There's a ton of activity there. And, you know, we're there to help in a ways that we can. It's probably not going to be Mike or I directly, but we know someone in the community that can help with any problem that any marketplace is dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. Check it out at everythingmarketplaces.com. And was it obsessedwithmarketplace.com?
Obsessedwithmarketplaces.com.
Excellent.
Or simpler, marketplace.capital.
All right. Henry, thank you very much for your time. This was a pleasure from my side, and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Two Sided, the Marketplace podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you really liked it, please give us a rating or a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you got inspired to build your own marketplace, go visit www.sharetribe.com. It's the fastest way to build a successful online marketplace business.